Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Sober as sober. Sober. Sober as
welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program devoted to bringing hope to those struggling with mental health issues and addiction. Through candid conversations with guests about mental health issues, addiction, and sobriety, we can let those who are struggling know that they are not alone. I am your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have Dr. Amanda Cheremaya. Dr. Mandy is from the village of Powati, located on the homelands of Laguna Pueblo in New Mexico. She believes one of the greatest gifts she has as an educator, a mentor, and a sister is the ability to build the confidence of students, especially Indigenous youth, through storytelling, photography, and videography. Amanda cares deeply about giving back to her Indigenous community and transforming spaces through visual narratives, Indigenous-focused scholarship, and methodologies. So guys, please help me welcome Dr. Amanda Cheremaya. Hi, Dr. Mandy. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Are you in Anchorage now?
I am, yep.
How do you like the snow and the cold?
Oh my goodness, I was thinking what kind of TikToks I can make with this snow.
Yeah, and speaking of TikTok, that's how I found you. One of your stories popped up on my feed, on my algorithm, and I was like, oh, this is cool. So I clicked on your page, and you have tons of content, native content, Indigenous content, and all of that. Before we get into it, can I ask you to please introduce yourself so our listeners can get to know you?
Sure, yeah. Gowatsi se hopa, kautuista, eshashka tzina hanusta, gwishti sa'au. So I just introduced myself in our traditional language called Karis. I'm from Laguna Pueblo, which is located right outside of Albuquerque, New Mexico. And so that's where I'm from. My village is called Powati. And so our traditional name for it is called Guishchi, which means like hand me down, like hand stuff down. My clans are Turkey and Roadrunner.
Wow. And you got a Roadrunner tattoo.
I do.
So cool. I played in a band called Medicine Dream, and we played at a Native American Music Awards in Albuquerque, New Mexico, at the Pope Joy Hall, I believe it was.
Nice.
Yeah.
Small world.
The reason I wanted to have you on was because you have such cool content. And, you know, my podcast, at the beginning, it was based I made it because I'm in recovery, and mm-hmm. So I made it to hold myself accountable and, you know, to have other people inspire other people. And it's just kind of evolved. Like the last episode I did was on MMIP and MMIW. Mm-hmm. And now I'm thinking about how I could expand a little bit. So I saw your page, and then I immediately thought of, you can inspire so many Native people.
thank you.
Yeah, because I love your content. Mm-hmm. And on your page, you say strengthening the collective and individual self-determination of Indigenous peoples and communities through education, storytelling, digital media, and advocacy. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're doing with your TikTok, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I try to do, is amplify my narrative as an Indigenous person.
And how do we build the confidence of Indigenous people?
That's a really good question. I think it's the continuing building up through words. I believe that if you can build up the confidence through speaking loving words to somebody and to show them and help them see that they can do it, whether if it's teaching them skills, life skills, or just simply saying words, I believe that when you build the confidence of our Indigenous people and anybody really, they're unstoppable. Like I believe that if you can have somebody like encourage them and mentor them, or you know, whatever that may look like, if it's through TikTok or actually in person and mentoring, that when you help build the confidence of somebody, like I appreciate and I enjoy seeing when the light kind of turns on in somebody, like, hey, like I can do that, you know, or hey, like I can use this information and use it in my own way. Like I just love that as a teacher and as a, you know, lifelong learner. I just love being able to come alongside our Native people and to encourage in that way.
Yeah. And your TikTok page has 51,500 followers. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yeah, thanks.
You mentioned Carlisle, and I saw a pretty recent post about you asked, do you know what happened in Carlisle? And I don't, and that's Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Can you please tell us about that?
Mm-hmm. So in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, there was over 8,000 Indigenous students from almost every nation here in the United States that was either forcibly taken or sent over to that boarding school. And what it's known for is that it's the first boarding school of its kind. And it was an experiment really to separate Indigenous people from their culture and integrate them into the quote unquote mainstream culture, American culture. And there are students, including from here in Alaska, that were sent or forced to make that journey down to Carlisle, which is several thousand miles away. And what happened was that boarding school set the blueprint for all other boarding schools that followed, not only here, but also influenced the boarding schools in Canada. But what happened though in the late 1800s, when this school was formed in 1879, is that a lot of our Indigenous children were forcibly, they had to cut their hair. The people cut their hair. They weren't able to speak their language. And just really, there were so many horrible things that were done to our Indigenous relatives. And so, but what happened though, too, is that, you know, the school evolved and there were students who went there too, who had a different experience, who had a more positive experience. But it's really just a whole conglomerate of experiences from that boarding school there in Carlisle. But that ripple effect, though, that the trauma that emerged from that will impact our Indigenous people for many, many, many years to come. And so when I went there, I was just engaging with some of the community, and I was sharing with the community that, you know, it took me 18 hours to get there from Anchorage, and I had three different flights. But I was thinking, I was doing research, and I was thinking about a lot of the Alaska Native children that went there in the late 1800s and the journey that they had to take to get on a boat from here and go down to the Seattle area and then take a train all the way from Seattle to Pennsylvania, and how long that was and what the conditions were. And I was just thinking, I was like, I cannot complain, you know, on this journey as I went back to visit, you know, the Carlisle Barracks, the former grounds. And it's very humbling experience when you literally step and walk in the footsteps of our ancestors that had endured so much. And that's the significance of the place. That's why it's essentially a ground zero, because that school, that facility, that, oh gosh, it just changed the face of our Indigenous people forever.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea. See, conversations like this need to happen. And, mm-hmm. you know, I had no idea children from Alaska even went there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, boarding schools, that's a difficult topic, like we were mm-hmm. talking about, you know, yeah. a difficult topic to talk about. And for many years, it's something that was never brought up, you know, mm-hmm. by the children that went there or the families that experience the children being taken from them, mm-hmm. you know, that experience of children being taken from families and families being torn apart is a big factor in why, you know, many have alcohol use disorders and substance use disorders mm-hmm. and trauma, you know. I brought up part of the reason or the one of the big factors of boarding schools was the alcohol use disorder and the substance use disorder. What are your thoughts about, you know, alcohol use disorder and substance abuse in our indigenous communities?
Recently, I was asked a question from one of the folks in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. They asked me, what do I believe is the greatest challenge within our communities, our indigenous communities? And my response was the lack of confidence within our indigenous relatives, because I believe that if an indigenous person doesn't recognize their self-worth, doesn't recognize, you know, who they are or have a grounding in some capacity, then that turns into things like engaging it with substances or trying to heal or to mend a wound in there of not feeling self-worth, right? Like, I think all these other factors come about, like using alcohol, because folks have, you know, a lack of self-confidence or a lack of self-worth. So that's why I'm such a huge proponent about building up that confidence, to know that folks, you know, are worthy and they are loved and they are, you know, uniquely placed here in this world and are sacred, because I feel like that confidence can help build and help, you know, that self-worth just continue to strengthen. And so in terms of like substances and alcohol abuse, I mean, I'm no stranger, you know, to that within my family and dealing with different things like that. And there's a few of my family members too, who have taken the journey and have gotten advanced degrees to be psychologists to help mend that. My sister's one of them, and my mom is too. And it's pretty remarkable to me that, you know, our family and my relatives have been placed in different capacities to help with our indigenous relatives who may struggle with substance abuse or alcohol abuse. And so, you know, I'm mindful that I come from, you know, relatives who have passed early, you know, long before I think they could have lived out their lives, but because they chose to engage with substances or alcohol, you know, like it's sad, you know, but I recognize that I have my own choice how I can live my life. And I choose to live my life to help engage and empower our indigenous communities.
Yeah, in my own story, and I talk about this early in, you know, growing up, I was ashamed to be Native because of the stigma that society put upon, you know, Native people being uneducated and, you know, alcoholics and dirty, you know. I was ashamed for the longest time until I joined that Native group, Medicine Dream. And then the leader of that group showed me that I should be proud of where I come from, you know, because we're such a powerful people. Native, indigenous people all over the world are so powerful. And you spoke about trauma and going to therapy. I go to therapy every week, you know,
yeah.
And it took me over 40 years because of what was taught, like, I'm an indigenous man. I can't cry. I can't talk about my traumas or what I went through or how I was when I was drinking and what I did, you know. I was so ashamed of that. And I'm just so grateful that we have people like you that can show us that, you know, you can get an education and you can inspire other Native people to do the same, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very humbling experience, you know, because when you're vulnerable, you're opening up yourself to all kinds of positive things, negative things, you know, and it's a risk to put yourself out there. But the risk is worth it to me because I'm able to engage with community members like you, right, that I don't think I would have met otherwise. And I think that risk is so important. When I think about, you know, being a storyteller, an indigenous storyteller, I encourage the audience to Google the 1884 Carlisle student body photo. And it's about 300 and something indigenous youth who went to the school. They're all in military uniforms. And in 1884, there's this huge picture of them. And, you know, everybody's looking at the camera and nobody's smiling. And you could just see on their faces the sorrow, you know, the hurt, the pain. And in that time, the photographers were the ones telling their stories, right, of our Native people. But now we have the capacity, the ability to share our story the way we want to, right? We're the ones with the cameras now. We're the ones with the microphones now, right? Where our relatives didn't necessarily have that ability, but now we do. So that's the why for me. That's the foundation of why I do this. I'm like, okay, I see them, I recognize our relatives, and now I have the microphone, right? Now we have the cameras, right? Mm-hmm. And so now we can share our story our way, the way that we want to. So that's worth the risk to me.
Oh, definitely. You work with a lot of Indigenous youth and students, right?
I do, yeah.
Do you ever see or like feel like generational trauma in the youth today?
Oh, all the time. Being able to engage with Indigenous youth, I think it's such an honor, and being able to mentor, if, you know, listeners are out there, if you have the ability to mentor the youth, I think that is so fulfilling. And being able to show them, it could be something so simple as showing them how to, you know, tie their traditional dresses or, you know, their regalia in a certain way. You know, maybe some people don't know how to do that, or, you know, where I come from, tie belts too, you know, or, you know, there's so many different elements that we could teach our native communities. And that's what I use TikTok for, right? It's like the how-tos, how to do this or whatever. But yeah, there's a lot of the youth that I've encountered that definitely have experienced that trauma and trying to figure out how to cope with it and how to move on from it to some extent. But yeah, definitely I've seen a lot of our youth struggle with that, with trauma.
Yeah. And that trauma can go deep. You know, there have been, you know, times that I felt like overwhelming grief and sadness that I thought there was only one way to get rid of that pain. And that was by taking a bottle of Tylenol, you know, and by God's grace, I survived. There's an epidemic of suicide in our Indigenous youth and in our people. What kind of words of encouragement would you say to our Native people who may be experiencing this pain?
I would say you are worthy, and you are loved, and you are sacred, and you are storytellers, and you are magnificent in who you are. Know that you're not alone. And I identify as a person who attempted suicide before a couple of times, actually. And I relate to you as, you know, when I was in middle school, I also took a bottle of Tylenol, and by a miracle, I woke up the next day. And that was something that sticks in my mind as I consider my journey now. And even before that, a few years before that, I thought about jumping off a cliff, which is one of the mesas in my community, nearby mesa. And, you know, I share a story on TikTok about this journey of overcoming thoughts of suicide and overcoming thoughts of not feeling worthy or not feeling loved. And Indigenous relatives, I want you to know that we need you here, that we need your energy, we need your strength. There's so few of us within, you know, this country and this nation. And because of that historical trauma, there so many of our people were wiped out. But we need you here, especially to the Indigenous men and Indigenous relatives that I feel like when I, you know, communicate on TikTok and communicate to our communities, like there's just something about our Indigenous men, you know, Indigenous relatives and those who transcend the binary too, you know, those who don't identify as a man or a woman. You know, I just encourage you to, you know, be who you are and to amplify your narrative and to figure out what your risk level is, you know, to share your narrative and to reach out. But I really, you know, just want you to know that you're sacred and that we need you here. We need your strength and we need your energy.
Mm-hmm. How important is taking care of your mental health? And how do you take care of your mental health?
It's so important. I believe that when I was a first year graduate student in my early 30s, essentially the trauma that I experienced as a young person caught up to me and in my 30s, early 30s. And that was the first time that I sought out resources like therapy, like medication to help me navigate the trauma. And since that point, I haven't looked back in terms of, you know, like getting resources. It was scary at first. Like, it was so scary to get resources like therapy because I didn't know what that looked like. And it was intimidating to go into an office and to talk to somebody. Like, that was so scary to me. And I didn't know what to expect. Like, I don't know. And so, but now going to therapy for 5 or more years, it's been such a relief to help me cope with others. And I do a talking circle of sorts, like a group setting where it's other Indigenous women. And we come together with a psychologist, a facilitator, and we go through skills and we work through, you know, how do we have healthy relationships? How do we cope with conflict? And all these really neat skills that I am learning in a different way, which has really, really helped me. So I prioritize that and prioritize being able to come in that space. And then also here at the Alaska Native Medical Center, in my opinion, is so phenomenal. I know there's different opinions about it, but coming from the lower 48 to here, it is so freaking awesome because in my opinion, I feel like people really care and people follow up really well. And so I really prioritize that in my journey, is to utilize the services there.
I don't know if you got to listen to the last episode, but I just did an episode on missing and murdered Indigenous people. And, you know, how media portrays these individuals and how the law enforcement and the different organizations seem to, you know, always... they seem to victim blame, you know, or they don't do a lot of coverage on this. What are your thoughts about this epidemic?
Yeah, I think, gosh, when I think about, I call it missing and murdered Indigenous relatives. So I use MMIR, and that's in, I know language is important, and I know there's a lot of different acronyms for the experience of our people in regards to that. My mom and my sister are a part of a murdered and missing Indigenous relatives task force, and that's at a national level through the American Psychological Association. And through that, I've learned a lot just connecting with both of them and hearing their experiences, as well as, you know, as I conceptualize just different resources I've seen. Like, it can be quite overwhelming. The way that I look at it is like a spider web, you know, like where there's all these strands, right? We hear stories on TikTok or social media, which is a strand, or we know relatives who've actually gone missing, which is another strand, or we have friends that knows that have a relative and their relative has gone missing, right? Which is another strand. And it can be like really messy, very, very messy. But I think about it like how a spider weaves the strands, you know, like it's weaving something very beautiful, right? And something very sacred. And that's how I think about MMIR as well, is that there's all these strands that are coming together, but it's interwoven in a way that's very sacred and very prominent. And so in the next few months, I'm collaborating with the task force through that my mom and sister are on to create a MMIR short documentary of sorts. Aww. And so I have video and different photographs from all across Indigenous America of our relatives. And, you know, it's hard. It's such a hard topic. Like when you go up to Kotzebue and you go to the park, you know, where the young relative was taken, you know, the little girl, and you see the sign there that honors her and tells her story, you know, your heart just sinks, right? Your heart just drops. Or, you know, a few years ago when one of my relatives was moving up here to Alaska, we drove through Canada and went on the Highway of Tears, and you see these billboards of these women, right? These black and white photos of these Indigenous women in Canada who've gone missing on that road. You know, your heart just sinks and you're like, oh my gosh, like... So it helps me think about my own positionality and think about my own safety as well, right? To consider how I can be safe as an Indigenous relative too. But it's ever evolving, right? As legislation is brought forth and the movement becomes more visible too. But I think the spider web analogy is probably the best way that I think about this topic within our communities.
Yeah, and it's such a hard topic that I brought up, you know, to talk about, but it needs to be discussed, it needs to be brought up, or else all of those relatives, like you say, are just, you know, they're just going to be swept under the rug, and that's not okay, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where can people find you, like your social media or website, or how can they look you up?
Yeah, so my social media, I'm on Instagram, TikTok, and X, which sounds all funny.
Oh, yeah.
X. But it's DrCheromiah. So Dr. Cheromiah is basically what it is. And I have my website. It's AmandaCheromiah.com. And my last name spelled Cheromiah.
Awesome. Awesome. Are there any last words of encouragement and inspiration to our fellow Native people?
I just want to acknowledge that being here in Alaska is a very, very unique, sacred place. And I've learned so much about the community here. And I'm more cognizant about when I travel across the country and travel, you know, throughout different communities in the world, like I am very cognizant of the differences between American Indian and Alaska Native peoples. And that's the experience that I've gotten being up here in Alaska and being more cognizant even of the language that I use too, because as I've understood that, you know, when I even like, for example, the term Indian country or Indian country, right? Like I have found that a lot of Alaska Natives don't identify with that term. And so being more cognizant of using things like Indigenous country, which sounds different, you know, but I want to be cognizant that, you know, the language is really important. And I just respect the communities here so much, respect the subsistence way of living. It's something I've never seen before in the capacities that I have. And I have so much respect for that ancestral knowledge and that sacred knowledge that our relatives have here in Alaska. So I just appreciate all of you and welcoming me here to this place. And just thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Mandy, for coming on here. I know you probably didn't know what to expect.
Just tell stories. Just, you can't go wrong.
Tell stories. I really appreciate you coming on here and sharing and inspiring our Native people. So thank you so much, Kuyana.
Yes, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I love it. I love sharing stories.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who is walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project Mondays at 2 p.m. on 88.1 FM KOYA, Rosebud's number one voice of the Secchangu Lakota, serving the Rosebud Sioux Tribe Reservation in South Dakota. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.